40 minutes past hour number one back here on Straight Shooter with yours truly, Stephen A. It's my honor and privilege to have my next guest on the show, U.S. Representative for the great state of Louisiana's 6th Congressional District, a position he assumed in January of 2025. He's had a long career in Louisiana politics, previously serving in Congress in the 1990s and spending several decades in the Louisiana State Senate, always as a member, of course, of the Democratic Party. Please welcome to the show for the first time, Representative Cleo Fields out of Louisiana. Good evening, sir. How are you?
It's good to be with you. Thank you, Stephen, for having me on the show. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you so much. Let's get right to it. I mean, this morning, the Supreme Court, we all know, 6-3 majority. Chief Justice Roberts has called your district, quote, a snake that stretches more than 200 miles. Obviously, the state of Louisiana switched sides and argued against the very map that elected you. So I'm going to ask you plainly, do you accept that the way your seat was drawn was unconstitutional, or do you believe 6 justices of the Supreme Court got it wrong?
Well, I mean, obviously, I think they got it wrong, but at the end of the day, it's a ruling of the Supreme Court, the highest court of our land. You know, they absolutely got it wrong. There are people in Louisiana, you know, who had all types of hurdles in front of them in order to even register to vote years ago. You know, it had literacy tests. You know, people would go to register to vote. They would say, state the preamble to the Constitution, you know, poll tax. I mean, we have had all types of obstacles in our way, even after we got the constitutional right to vote. And then the Congress of the United States passed the Voting Rights Act, which, you know, basically regulated states, said you can't have these types of laws to impair, you know, African Americans from participating in the political process. And then African Americans were, you know, beginning to be elected to office for the first time. And, you know, I totally disagree with the court. I mean, the court basically took the same ruling they used in the Holder case. They said that, you know, you cannot use the historical, you know, record, you know, for creating a district. You got to show present discrimination. Well, there's not a single African-American ever elected to Congress from the state of Louisiana from a majority white district. We've had several African-Americans to run, you know, I mean, and that's recent history. So I just think the Supreme Court got it wrong. I mean, if you tell me, Stephen, you know, if you got to jump, I got to jump higher, I can perhaps do that. If you tell me I got to run faster, I can perhaps do that. But if you tell me I got to be white to be a member of Congress from Louisiana, there's nothing I can do about that. I need a little help from my government. And unfortunately, the Supreme Court, you know, ruled against the district. But, you know, I've been here before. This is not my first rodeo. You know, every day I've served in Congress, there's been a lawsuit in the Supreme Court against the existence of this district.
Justice Kagan wrote in dissent that today's decision renders Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, quote, all but a dead letter. Do you agree with that? And if so, specifically why?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, because basically, you know, if you don't have Section 2, they did away with Section 5. If you don't have Section 2, you have nothing. You need a Voting Rights Act, and you don't have it now. And I think she's right because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, that was the object of the case. Do we have, you know, a Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act? Louisiana's case was drawn not solely based on race. I was in the legislature when it was created. You know, it was more based on politics than race. Was race an issue? Absolutely. You can't draw Section 2, voting rights districts without taking race into account. And I think the Supreme Court just didn't get it right.
What recourse do you have, sir, from here?
Well,
considering today's ruling,
you know, I think the Congress, you know, particularly the next Congress, the Congress is going to have to pass the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. You know, the Congress makes the law. The Supreme Court just simply interpret it. And I think the Congress need to pass a Voting Rights Act that is clear and unambiguous so that it won't leave any courts, you know, leave anything up to the interpretation of courts. There are states in this country that discriminate against blacks in the voting in voting patterns. I mean, you know, there are black voters who vote for blacks, white voters who vote for whites, and you know, black voters are in a minority. And at the end of the day, unless they're in the majority, they will never, you know, get elected to office. And this is much bigger than the congressional seat. This is about legislative seats, city council seats. You know, perhaps if you don't live in a, you know, in the southern part of our country, you know, you don't have these problems to worry about. But there are a lot of states, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, you know, all of these southern states need a Voting Rights Act that works and is incumbent upon Congress to pass one.
You alluded just a few seconds ago to the Shelby County versus Holder case going back to 2013, where preclearance obviously was an issue that was addressed at that particular moment in time. Back then, the conservatives had a 5-4 majority, if I remember correctly. Obama was in office. Holder was your attorney general, but in the same breath, they had a 5-4 majority. Obviously, it got to 6-3 once Trump got into office and once Ruth Bader Ginsburg passed away in 2020, along with other selections he had obviously made. I'm wondering what level of culpability, if any at all, would you attach to the Democratic Party for being in this situation? Was there negligence on anybody's part? Was it not taking it seriously enough? Was this not putting forth the due diligence and thinking something like this would never happen? Is there anything at all, sir, that you'd like to point out, if anything?
Well, I mean, I don't know, Stephen A. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, this climate today is just so partisan. And, you know, you got a president that says, you know, I need 5 more seats in Texas, call the governor of Texas, and governor of Texas then go right into full motion, creating 5 additional.
4 more in Florida today, by the way.
Yeah.
4 more in Florida today, by the way.
And yeah. Yeah. And it's just become a total, you know, political war. You got a Supreme Court that ruled today that you can gerrymander based on politics, but you can't do it based on race. Well, you got to take race into account when you're dealing with a voting rights case. And at the end of the day, the reason why we have a Voting Rights Act to begin with is because blacks have been traditionally discriminated against, you know, at the voting box. And so it's a tough. I don't know if I would blame Democrats. You know, I blame, you know, all of us. And we need to get more involved in politics. I heard some of your comments earlier today. I think people don't need to give up hope. I think people need to register to vote. I think people need to vote like they've never voted before. And this too shall pass. I mean, we can't back away. We got to get more involved. I'm true and blue. I actually went through this 33 years ago. So I know what it feels like to have your seat taken. But you just got to be resilient, fight back.
One of the things that we do as a nation, I think that it's our default position to look at the president. And my attitude is, okay, you know what he is, you know how he thinks, you know what he's going to do, et cetera, et cetera. Last time I checked, folks in the House of Representatives, I'm talking about folks on the Republican side, folks in the House of Representatives and the Senate, they're supposed to have a spine. They're supposed to stand up. They're supposed to make sure that they're willing to stand up to the president or what have you. And when you talk about what Congress needs to do, they still have power in the House and obviously to a larger degree in the Senate. What hope do you hold for change? You're somebody that's been around for quite a long time, very experienced. I could see the pain in your face. I know what this means to you. I can truly, truly appreciate where you're coming from, looking at you the way that I am right now, and being a black man, understanding this is really bad as far as I'm concerned. I'm wondering what level of hope you hold that this can be rectified somehow, some way. And if so, where does that hope come from?
Well, right now in this Congress, I'm caught between hope and expectations. I hope, but I don't expect. But the next Congress, I think my hope will meet its expectations. I think the next Congress, you know, I think Democrats will be in control, and Democrats will, you know, I mean, there are 3 branches of government right now. You know, you would assume is only one, and that's the executive branch. You know, we need to have 3 branches of government and 3 branches that operate independent of one another. And I think you will have that at least a legislative branch that's going to be independent come November. And I think you'll see some changes, and people that hope will then start bringing, moving into more of expectations.
Do the Democrats have a plan?
I think they do.
I mean, particularly as the midterm is, I'm asking that in all sincerity, because I'd like to know what it is in your estimation.
Yes, we have a plan. A first plan we have is to, you know, get voters to the poll. We can't, you know, overlook that. Voters need to really get to the polls and voice their concerns this election, this November. And when Democrats take control, there are a lot of things that Democrats will do, you know, on day one. I mean, we've cut Medicaid, you know, drastically, you know, over the past year and a half. We have to restart.
Isn't it about close to $1 trillion that Medicaid has been cut?
We have to restore those that funding. My state in particular, I mean, my state is an expansion state. We got, you know, hundreds of thousands of people that will go off the rolls once this big ugly bill actually take effect. So that's a plan that the Democrats have. Democrats, you know, we have a plan right now, and it's working, not in the House, but it's working in the Senate on this SAVE Act, you know, where we disenfranchising voters, taking people, you know, women who are, you know, who have to show, you know, identification to register to vote. I mean, that's just totally asinine. Women who, you know, merit names are different from their maiden name. They got to go jump through 3 and 4 hoops in order to prove that they are who they are. You know, that's a total case of disenfranchisement. I think the Democrats are going to have to be very serious on economic. They have to roll back all of these cuts in Medicaid, and they have to protect, you know, some of the things that we are protecting today in the House of Representatives, or rather in the Senate, because the House has really rolled over and allowed this president to have his way every time and every day.
We've spoken, last question to you, we've spoken and I've been talking a lot about all the redistricting that's been going on, because obviously Texas, today it's Florida. A few weeks ago, it was obviously Gavin Newsom in California. It was Abigail Spanberger with Virginia. We've seen this on both sides of the aisle. I guess what I'm asking now is, as I look at this issue, the Republicans would make the argument that, you know what, we're looking for a partisan advantage. That's fair gamesmanship. That's what we want to do. But if you are a black person in America today, obviously it goes far, far deeper than that. So if you had to answer the question, Representative Fields, as to why this has happened, how would you answer somebody that asks that question?
I would say it's because of the climate. And I think the climate was set by the president. I think there are a lot of Republicans who are afraid to buck the president even today because they don't want to be primary. I think that is the source of the problem. But, you know, we can fix it. You know, it's not too late. Come November, people need to go to the polls and they need to vote in record numbers. Now, there is some question as to what real impact this Supreme Court decision will have on the 6th congressional district. You know, the people in Louisiana have already started voting, and I would take a position very little on this upcoming election, because, you know, people have already voted by absentee ballot. People are going to the polls on Saturday to vote. Candidates are qualified. But it's going to have a tremendous impact 2 years from now, you know. And I would say a lot of this is caused by the attitude of the president of the United States. And I think it has trickled down into every state legislature across the country.
Representative Cleo Fields from the 6th District of Louisiana, I wish I was speaking to you under better circumstances, but thank you again for taking time out of your busy schedule to join the show. I really, really appreciate it. And you're welcome back anytime, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Stephen. I appreciate you.
All right. No problem. Representative Cleo Fields right here on Straight Shooter with yours truly, Stephen A. Sirius XM, POTUS Radio, Channel 124. Let's get back to the phones real quick before I end this hour. Beverly in New York, you're back. I hope your signal is a lot better. Go ahead, Beverly.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. Go ahead, please, real quick.
Okay. I agree with you on Ginsburg, except you left out the part where Mitch McConnell wouldn't even let Obama nominate Garland. That set the stage. He said it was too close to an election. Let the people decide. But then he let Trump.
Oh, you're talking about Garland. You're talking about Garland. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. But Beverly, no. I'm not saying you're wrong about that, because you're absolutely right about that. I get that part. But Mitch McConnell's the opposition, so he's not going to do Obama any favors. That's not the crime. The crime was Ruth Bader Ginsburg was a Democrat. She was a liberal justice, okay? And Obama was a liberal in the White House. And the administration wanted her to retire to ensure that they could put another liberal on the courts, because obviously her health was compromised and she was climbing up there in age. And according to numerous reports, she did not want to give that seat up and retire so he could elect somebody, because she assumed Hillary was going to win and she wanted a woman to choose her successor. Respectfully, that was a justice thinking about herself and not the country. And I think that that is something that needed to be said and has not been mentioned. I have a real problem with that. To assume that somebody is going to win with such an important election as was 2016, and to not allow Obama to make that call before then because you wanted a woman to choose your successor, Beverly, I just think she dropped the ball.
I agree 100%. But you do agree that Mitch McConnell did. Then he turned around and let Trump nominate months before an election.
No, of course I agree with you. I'm just saying he's the opposition. He wasn't going to do Obama any favors, duh.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Mike Johnson's not going to do, they're not going to do a liberal any favor. That's the polarization that exists in our country today. So as unfortunate as it is, it's also predictable. I'm saying the crime was when you have a liberal in the White House and a liberal justice, and the liberal justice wants his successor to choose her successor, as opposed to letting him do it. I mean, that reeked of arrogance to assume that Hillary Rodham Clinton was going to win. Look at what that's done. That's made our court 6-3 majority instead of 5-4. That's a problem. It's a problem, Beverly.
You're right, 100%. Can I say one other quick thing?
Real quick, you got 30 seconds.
Biden is responsible, too, because he should have said he wasn't going to run again, let them have primaries to pick a person.
Totally true.
Instead of just nominating Harris, there was no way they were going to vote for her. A woman and black, no way, not going to happen.
Beverly, I got to go. You're absolutely right. Biden swore he would be a transitional president. He would serve one term and went against it and stuck around too long, embarrassed himself on the stage during the debate. And ultimately, when he gave it up, running for the second term, it was too late for a primary. You're absolutely right. It's facts. I'm not here to dispute it. Robert Reich. Up next, right here with Stephen A., Straight Shooter in the House. Hour number 2 up next. Don't go away.